And a good rainy Wednesday to you, and welcome into Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you for the next 4 hours. Lots of things to get into, like I said, on this kind of crappy Wednesday. Just saying. Kind of rainy. Kind of blah. Kind of blah. Kind of feels like a Monday, but it's not. We'll have Robbie Stanley join us in about 15 minutes. He just got done working, but we're going to put him back to work in 15. Predators get
it done. Has
he
got enough in the tank? Is he okay?
I think so. I think so. He's young, man.
Can he go?
He's young. Those young whippersnappers, they got testosterone. Their levels are
good. I just saw him. He's down and out. He's in the corner. He's getting the water. You know, the trainers are working on him right now.
Well, it's always good to hydrate, no matter what age you are.
He's going to have to make the most of these 15 minutes that he's got off.
Yeah. Well, I want him to rest. We want him to take some time off, take this 15 minutes off, catch his breath,
okay, and
be ready to get after it, you know, at 10:15. I don't want him sleepwalking, right? We don't want that. I don't think he will, though. I think he's going to be fired up. There's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to get into, including the win last night. Just kick off the month of February. Nice little 4-2 win.
Very good win.
Over a Vancouver team that's played really well since Boudreau took over.
Vancouver was 12-4-4 in their 20 previous games coming into last night, including a win here in Nashville against the Predators. So the last game before you go into a break, a pretty extended break, you've only got one game in the next 11 days while the rest of the league is going to play some more. You heard John Hines say it a number of times yesterday. He says, we don't want to sit on a loss. You know, you don't have a game for a while. You don't want to walk away from here feeling like you left some things on the table and you didn't get it done. I thought they were a little sluggish at the beginning of the game, but I thought by the end of the game, it was clear who the better team was. They won going away.
Indeed they did. And Philip Forsberg, I'm sure we'll talk about with Robbie, just continues to tear it up. Two more goals last night. 24 goals in 33 games. That's not bad. I mean, that's Kentucky math I'm doing there. My Kentucky math says that's pretty darn good.
He had two, which was, two enormous goals in the context of the game. He's not just scoring goals. He's scoring big goals, big goals. And he almost had the third.
He was robbed
of the third goal in the second period. It was a great save by Thatcher Demko. The Predators scored four off a goalie that hadn't been given up much. Thatcher Demko has been lights out. He's an excellent goalie. They got four off of him, and you look at some of the quality of the shots. Forsberg's two goals were both high-skill goals. Puck goes into a really tight area. And then Ryan Johansson made a beautiful shot, too, for his goal. So that's a good team win for the Predators. They're just good. I think the more time goes by, you know, people around the league, they look around, they're like, hey, this team is just good. There's a little bit of, hey, you know, these guys are playing pretty well. Forsberg's playing pretty well. But the more time goes by, you just accept this is a good team. They're not going anywhere.
I think it's kind of hard. I think even the biggest doubters in the world, or even the ones that have been kind of asleep at the wheel, it would be kind of hard for you not to think this team is different than what everybody thought coming into the season. I don't think there's that seems just virtually impossible to have a different thought than, yeah, they're about what I thought. No, nobody's saying that. Like, literally no one is saying, yeah, they're about what I thought they would be, what they would look like. That's not what anybody's saying. Like, you have to sit here through 46 games and go, oh, okay. Well, they are certainly exceeding expectations. And then, of course, everybody would identify the players that they needed to, you know, for you to exceed expectations, you know that they would have to be having good seasons. And you look at the stats and you go, oh, okay. Well, that makes sense now, right? I mean, it's what we've been saying for 2 years. I mean, it's not like some groundbreaking discovery I just made. Oh, my gosh. Matt Duchene has 21 goals in the first half of the season. Predators would be pretty good. If Ryan Johansson has 13 goals in the first half of the season, they'll be pretty good. Or now that they're in the second half of the season, but you know what I mean. just well, past the midway point.
You know, I think you and I
Forsberg
said this.
Having a career year. I mean, look, I said it yesterday, and look, it's not, once again, this is not out on a limb. This is not groundbreaking news. Don't need to hit a sounder. If Phil Forsberg plays the rest of the season, he's gonna score 40 goals this year. He is. He's going to have the best season. And he doesn't have to get to 40 to do that. 30 was 34 the mark. I mean, he's going to have the best season a Predators player's ever had, and I suspect he'll get to 40. Something we've talked about since the inception of this franchise. When are they going to get that player get to 40? I suspect it'll happen. He's available the rest of the way.
To me, whether he gets to 40 or, you know, it ends up being 33 or 36, whatever it is, he's the way he's playing. And the way Duchesne is playing and Johansson are playing, that's really what you're seeing. The results are sort of taking care of themselves. It doesn't always have to be them who scores the goals, but they're driving the team. You and I said this in the preseason, Darren. You know, I remember that one day I think we were at training camp. We were freezing. We were layered up.
We hadn't gone outside
and
yet.
And you kind of started the conversation on the air by saying, you know what, I kind of think this team's a lot better than – people are saying. And I was like, you know what, I've been thinking the same thing, and we had that conversation. Mm-hmm. So people who make the predictions in the preseason, you know, websites, when they do their prognostications, they all did their thing. The consensus was that Nashville would be sixth or seventh. I would say, in the ones I saw, they were more often seventh than any other position. There were some that had them, you know, fifth, fourth. But by and large, they did not have this. They had them behind the Jets. They had them behind the Blackhawks most of the time. They had them behind, you know, they did not have them in the eight getting to the playoffs very often. But you and I were sitting there going, well, you know, they did win 20 of their last 28. Did people just kind of look the other way on that? And I think they did. But what has happened is, how did they win 20 of the last 28? Well, number one, UC Saros played out of his mind, right? He started to become the guy that he still is, right? He's just picked up where he left off. He's just as good. He's carried those numbers into this year. So you got that. That's the first thing. That's going to make you competitive. All of these young players that started emerging down the stretch, they've all come back. They've all got another year under their belt. They're all contributing as a group, right? You can go right down the line. Janot, Trennan, Tolvanen, Cunnan, Tomasino, even guys like Novak, of course, Carrier, Fabro. They're all young, and they all started to get their legs last year. But then what's taken them to a next level is that, because look at the last 28 games last year. It really wasn't because of Forsberg, Duchesne, or Johansson, right? Those guys were hurt or unproductive, or both. But now you add that on top of this, and now you've really got a team that can stack up with just about anybody. Like, I think they would be a decided underdog against Colorado, because Colorado is just unbelievable how they're carving up teams. Of course, their loss last night, notwithstanding, they lost to the Coyotes at home somehow. That's who ended their 18-game home losing streak. Isn't that weird? But other than that, could they stand toe-to-toe with Minnesota, with St. Louis? Vegas is an interesting one, because they're still playing without some horses that, in theory, they'll have when the time comes. But I don't see the Predators having to take a huge backseat to, in the West, anybody other than maybe Colorado as a decided underdog right now. And, of course, we don't know what teams are going to add. We don't know what injuries are ahead. There's a lot that can happen post All-Star break here, but I just like how it's materializing for this team.
I think the point you're making is, through 46 games, through this body of work right now, they belong. I mean, there's no way getting around it, right? I mean, they're in the group that is going to be talking about playing extra hockey once the 82 games are done. I mean, unless something really, really, really drastic happens, which I guess you never say never, but I don't see that happening. And, this team is going to be in the thick of things. I know they've got, you know, Minnesota's got like six games in hand on them. But, and you know, the Predators have played, I think, more games than almost anybody in the league. So there is that. But, yeah, I mean, I think this is just what they are. I think it's interesting for all the people that, you know, and you know this as well as I do, all the people that were certainly, let's say, there's several words that fit this. They were questioning. They had their doubts about John Hines,
were,
right?
Yeah, some were mocking. Some were really derisive.
That's where I was going. Some were
of John Hines for that matter, David Poile.
Yeah, right.
Saying, what's this competitive thing? What does this mean? All this stuff. You know, there were a lot of people that questioned that, and they did it in a kind of sarcastic way that people do on shows like this or on social media. But if you take a look, you can go back for after they lost that series in the bubble, and they sort of had come to grips with everything with John Hines, who was still a new coach, and they kind of had their plan. They said, you know what, we've got to shake this up. We can't just keep doing things the same way. We've got to change our identity. It has been done very systematically. It's been done very smartly. Even through the times where people were saying, what are they doing? They don't know what they're doing. They need to blow it up. They need to get a new coach. They need to get a new GM. So you got to commend them for sticking with their plan and executing it.
Yep, no doubt about it. We'll come back. And by the way, that's what I was going to say. There were doubters, and then there was another group that said, this guy just flat out isn't the guy. Like, they're not going to win with this guy, right? There was, like, another category, another level. I wonder what those groups think today. I wonder if they still feel the same, if they've come off that stance, if they're just quiet and they're waiting. Because there's some people that just they quietly wait, right? They wait for it to turn. So then go, see, I told you, right? And I wonder, I'm just curious what they're thinking today, because they were pretty loud. And they may have been the loud minority, right? I mean, we talk about that all the time. Sometimes the louder they are doesn't mean it's the majority. It could be the minority, and that may be the case, and I suspect it is. But I wonder how they think right now, because certainly was a lot of doubt. A lot of doubt, and as you mentioned, you can throw David Poile in there too. A lot of doubt. Time has passed him by. He can't get it done. He can't fix this. And here they sit second in the Central Division. And it took an unbelievable heater by Colorado to get to that. We'll come back. Robbie Stanley from Robbie and Rex Road. They lead up to our show every day here on these airwaves. We'll talk to him next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on the DDC, our show is presented by Creation CBD Products, curated for life. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here on this rainy, yucky Wednesday.
But hey, we got Debbie Harry and Blondie going, so what else do you want? Okay, let's not think about the rain, Darren. Let's think about the tunes. Let's get in the vibe. You know, come on. Let's get this going. I don't want to be reminded about what's behind me.
I see what you did there. We're vibing. Yeah. I see what you did there.
You see?
We're vibing, Robbie Stanley. He's the host.
Who's
you just heard
vibing?
It. We're vibing. We're vibing, Robbie. Hey, by the way, can you get a shirt in 3XL so I can wear your face on my chest? Big boys, wear your shirts face? Too.
Okay.
We could probably see what can be done on that point. Yeah.
I mean, come on. Big boys. Big boys wear T-shirts, too.
That's true.
I'm just saying.
Look, you got to take it up with number 92. I don't make the sizes.
Well, your people get in touch with their people and get back to my people. We'll make this
we can
all
do
work.
That.
By the way, your host of Preds Insiders, you heard that promo Monday nights. Check that out during the 6 o'clock hour. I know we're going to get into a lot of Preds stuff. I'm going to start on the Titans front and just, I mean, really hit you. Let's play Sports Talk Radio GM. Yay! Love this game. In all seriousness, we're paid to give our opinions for 4 hours a day, so here goes. It's a big offseason for the Titans because they underachieved again, this time worse than the year before. This is a big, big offseason for John Robinson and Mike Vrabel. How do you go about trying to fix this and get them to take the next step? Because that was the whole point of the move, right? The whole point of the move was to take the next step, and I know they did it. They have done that with Mike Vrabel. They took the next step with Mularkey, but it was about sustaining that success and continuing to build on that success, and now they're going the wrong way. You're going the wrong way. So how do you go about trying to fix it?
Well, it's a really difficult question because in a lot of ways, it feels to me like they missed their window this year. I mean, and some of that has to do with them and their roster and their team, and some of that has to do with, I think, other teams and specifically other quarterbacks. Like, by no means did I expect Joe Burrow to be in the Super Bowl. And look, they could very well go on to win this game in L.A. I just keep thinking.
Don't worry about it, Robbie. Don't worry about it. The odds makers didn't either. So you weren't the only one.
That's true. What was it? 125 to 1.
I put this stat out yesterday. The five teams that had the lowest odds to get to where, you know, Cincinnati is today. Four of those five teams have picks 1, 2, 3, and 4 in the draft. So the odds makers were correct. They were dead on right. Yeah. The fifth team is Cincinnati. They're at SoFi Stadium, or at least soon to be at SoFi Stadium. Yeah.
I mean, it just goes to show you the importance of the quarterback position. And that's why I say, to me, it's not only like what the Titans didn't accomplish this year, but it's also, you know, Joe Burrow is going to be here next year. What's going to happen? How good is he going to be if they ever find a way to protect him on the offensive line? Josh Allen, I think, continues to get better. Oh, by the way, there's some guy named Patrick Mahomes that still plays in the AFC. Like, to me, it sounds kind of crazy to say this, and just kind of follow me here, because I know, I mean, the 91 players with injuries, so many different things we heard about. It was such a challenging road for the Titans to get to this point and to end up with the number one seed. And I still think they deserve a lot of credit for being able to navigate their way through the regular season and get there. But honestly, by the time the playoffs came around, I mean, you couldn't really ask for much more. You're at home field. You got healthy. You got your best player back in time for the playoffs. Like, everything seemed to be lining up for the Titans to make a deep run. And they choked. That's what they choked in the playoffs. And now you ask yourself, okay, well, let's take around the look at the rest of the AFC. You know, Joe Burrow is only going to get better. I think Josh Allen is still getting better. You still got Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert. I mean, there's so many guys at the quarterback position that you feel great about with their teams and just kind of the evolution of their career getting better. You look at this Titans roster, especially on the offensive line, which we talked about that a little bit today on the show. Like, something's going to have to change with the roster from a salary cap standpoint. It's difficult for me to imagine both Lawan and Saffold being back next year. So with that being said, like, how do you really improve the offense all that much if, you know, maybe Dylan Raidens is your starting left guard? Like, there's a lot of things that are going to have to happen in terms of getting this offense better. You got A.J. Brown. You got Julio Jones. How great do you really feel about Julio Jones next season, another year older with the injuries that he's been through? So there's a lot of conversation out there right now. Well, that's great. Looks like Ryan Tannehill is going to be the quarterback. If you're John Robinson, you got to find a way to make the team as great as possible around him. And I guess my comeback to that is, well, how much better can it really be than what we saw from this offense and what it was supposed to be on paper heading into the playoffs? Everybody was healthy coming back into that game. So I think that's going to be a pretty big challenge for John Robinson this offseason.
This report brought to you by Rain. That was very gray and rainy right there. That didn't lift up anybody's spirits. But you painted it correctly. By the way, you left out Lamar Jackson in Baltimore.
Yeah, that guy too.
You know, in all seriousness, I know people is kind of a lightning rod divided on how great they – last year was the proof. When he's in there, even though their games are close either way, they find a way to win when he's in there. When he's not in there, they lose those close games. So – you know, they've done a whole lot of winning with him under center, so they got that guy too. So with that being said, you know, I do wonder what the two biggest names that could be on the move, possibly. Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson. With what you just laid out, why on God's green earth would they leave the NFC to come to the AFC? Right now with Tom Brady retiring, isn't the NFC got a better path than what's going on in the AFC?
Well, I don't think there's any question about it.
I know those guys don't think like, you know, they don't like, oh, I'm scared of those guys. But you'd have to say the AFC, because of what you just laid out, looks moving forward like a much tougher path to a Super Bowl than the NFC.
I agree with that 1,000%. Now, I will say I kind of look at it more in terms of divisions than I do the conference as a whole. So if you're Russell Wilson, I could also see where you're sitting there saying, all right, you've got the Rams, the Cardinals, and the 49ers, who, by the way, just were in the NFC title game with Jimmy Garoppolo as their quarterback, all in my division. It's the toughest division in football. So yep. I still think you can make an argument for what Russell Wilson to say, yeah, maybe I would be better served getting out of Seattle and going to a place maybe like the Titans, where yes, the AFC, they have all these great quarterbacks, everything you just talked about. They also play in a division that's not very good right now. So there's that part of it as well. Like the Rodgers part of this, you know, the NFC North, if he comes back to the Packers, I mean, you basically punched your ticket at that point to the playoffs. Now, you can make the same argument here with the Titans as well. But when you line up quarterbacks conference to conference right now, and, you know, I heard you guys talking about it the other day, it's not really comparable. The AFC has, I think, way more high-level quarterbacks right now than the NFC does.
So did I hear you? You think it'll be Saffold? When the music stops, there's only one chair. You think Saffold is the one that's going to be standing up and Lawan is going to be the one sitting in the chair? Did I read that correctly?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the way it plays out. And it's really, to me, it comes down to the position they play, right? I mean, you know, Taylor Lawan has his faults. And obviously in the first part of last year, he didn't play well. And the injuries are concerning with him moving forward. You know, all those things are true. I did think he played better in the second half of the season. I thought he started to look more like Taylor Lewan as the season wore on there. And if he's not going to be your left tackle, who is? I know some people point to Dylan Raidens and the game he had against San Francisco. I think that's been overblown a little bit. I thought he was serviceable in the game against San Francisco. But let's not act like he was some Pro Bowl shutdown left tackle out there. I mean, to me, it just basically comes down to the position. If Taylor Lewan's not going to be your left tackle, well, who is? And we know how important that position is in today's NFL. So, you know, I thought John Robinson had some really interesting comments yesterday in a conversation he had with Jim Wyatt, where he was talking about Zach Cunningham, and the way he worded it was basically that Zach Cunningham, he said he's looking forward to working with him. And that tells me that Zach Cunningham is going to be back next year.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, that was another guy that's a big cap in. So if Cunningham's going to be back, you would assume one of the two of Saffold and Lawan are going to be back. It's difficult to imagine all three of those guys being back. And I think Saffold will probably end up being the odd man out.
All right, what else are you addressing? What else are you doing to try to fix this and, you know, try to advance this? Where are you going next? You talked about the offensive line. Then what?
Well, I think it's pretty clear from this season that the Tannehill needs help at tight end. And I know if you go by the numbers – you know, Jonnu Smith was not overly productive here from a numbers standpoint. I think there was a pretty clear difference this year from Anthony Firkser to Jonnu Smith and not having him out there and what that means. Now, you know, the tight end free agent market is actually loaded heading into this offseason. The problem is some of those upper echelon guys are going to cost a lot of money. So I don't know if you address tight end in free agency or if you spend a draft pick on it or maybe a combination of the two. This is where not having a second-round pick with the Julio trade really comes back to bite you this year. But I think tight end is going to be a necessity. I mean, just think about, you know, Firkser and what they got out of the tight end group. You know, Pruitt had some nice moments, but none of those guys, you know, instill any fear into opposing defenses. You got Chester Rogers at slot wide receiver. Like, the middle of the field really wasn't much of a threat in the passing game this year. And I know you can move A.J. Brown around, and he can play in the slot if you need him to, and they move him all over the field. But I just feel like a true threat in the middle of the field to go along with A.J. on the outside and Julio, who I still expect to be back next year, I think that would be a good approach for John Robinson and the Titans. So the tight end position, I think, is of utmost importance this offseason.
Just to tell you how committed I am to the tight end position, Robbie, Willie can attest to this. I last season was questioning it last offseason, going into this past season. I had huge concerns about it. Well, you can imagine that's been elevated. It's so elevated that last night when I got home from the game, I couldn't sleep. I was watching all the activities down in Mobile on NFL Network. And they talked a lot about the tight ends. Hey, there's some stud tight ends. Stud tight end, just saying. They were,
oh boy.
They were talking about the tight end class.
We got to hear this for 5 months. Is that what we got to do?
No, the draft is not in 5 months.
4 months.
Yeah, it's less than. It's at the end
of
April.
You went home last night after the hockey game and started watching people run around doing drills?
This is a problem. This is a big problem.
We might need to have an intervention with you, my friend.
Is there something wrong? Something wrong? Did I do something wrong? I know. I literally was laughing to myself. I'm going, oh, my God, I'm sitting here watching this stuff down in Mobile, and I'm actually paying attention because they're talking a lot about the tight end position. They said there's some studs. There's this guy from Colorado State. There's another, you know, there's some guys that the people really like, and I'm saying, okay, Titans, hope John Robinson, hope everybody's paying attention.
That's right.
Do you think they
maybe John Robinson dreaming about that stuff too?
All right, last thing on my end. Do you think that they can afford to bring back Deontay Foreman? Do you think it'll happen?
I don't think it will. I think that he played well enough to where he'll garner some interest around the league, and I think some of it will be about the money, but I think some of it's also about opportunity. I think Foreman knows that if Derrick Henry comes back next year and he's healthy, I mean, they're going to turn around and hand the ball off Derrick Henry. I mean, that's what they're going to do. I think we all recognize that. So I'd be surprised if Foreman was back. I do think, you know, he's not going to go out and get a monster contract or anything like that, but I think he played well enough to show teams around the league that he can carry the load for you offensively in terms of running the ball if you need him to. Now, you know, the other part of this to consider is there's not many teams around the NFL anymore that are built the same way the Titans are and rely on the running game that much. But I'd be surprised if Foreman comes back. You know, Dontrell Hilliard's interesting to me because he basically took over Jeremy McNichol's role at the end of the season, became the third down back. I really liked a lot of what I saw from him outside of him fumbling the ball, which is a problem. You got to get that worked on as you move forward here. But I think Hilliard is more likely to be back here than Foreman is.
See, Willie, I told you he would have more in the tank. He's good. We'll come back. We're going to give him a quick breather, quick timeout. We'll come back. More with Robbie Stanley next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, talking to Robbie Stanley from Robbie and Rex Road, our morning show, and continue our discussion here on the local scene. So, Robbie, let's switch the attention to the rink here. I heard a really good conversation you and Joe were having this morning about just the team's outlook here. Darren and I kicked it around in the first segment of the show, but I think you used the term, it's just so many different things clicking. It's almost like you can't keep track of them all. The story of UC Soros, the story of Tanner Janot, the resurgence of Duchesne and Johansson. You just go right down the list. A lot has fallen into place in this pre All-Star break section of the season.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it, Willie. And it's one of those things where, to me, it's totally changed my outlook, both in the short term and the long term, for this group. I mean, we spent all offseason long talking about, you know, competitive rebuilds and whatever term that you want to use. And, you know, Johansson, I think he's playing really well. And I tried to highlight this morning on the show. You know, Granlund and Duchesne and Forsberg, what they're doing together obviously is awesome, and it's special, and it's a treat to watch on a nightly basis. Now, Ryan Johansson, I think, is playing really darn well, and he doesn't really have wingers along with him that are the same in terms of their production, and he's still finding ways to produce. Now, I know that he's on the power play, and a lot of his production has come on the power play as well, but there's just so many things going right for this team. Yossi, I think, is playing as well as he's ever played, maybe better than he's ever played, which is scary to think about. UC Soros is an absolute stud. Like, if you would have told me all these things would happen for the Predators this year before the season, I probably would have said you were nuts. And yet here they are, and all these things are happening. And Willie, not only are they happening, but it doesn't feel like it's a fluke. Like, it doesn't feel like anyone's playing outside of themselves at this point. It just feels like they're at a place in their game where they've totally bought into the system. They know the way that they have to play in order to win. Their confidence is high, which I don't think can be overlooked, and they've accepted the way that they have to play in order to be successful. And that's why, with each passing game, I become more and more a believer in this team, because I don't sense that much of it's a fluke. You know, 46 games is a pretty large sample size at this point. This just kind of feels like what they are.
You guys kicked around the Forsberg thing. At this point, it looks pretty certain that they would like to try to make a run at signing him here. It just doesn't look like there's any scenario where they would consider trading him at this point. But let me throw it this way at you, Robbie. You just mentioned a really interesting part of the team. Elie Tolvin and Luke Kunnert are both young players, and they've had their moments this year. They're not the guys that are going to sit there probably, unless one of them has a big hot streak. They're not going to end up with 25 or 30 goals or anything that looks like that. But Johansson's been very productive. So all that to say, what are you thinking if you're David Poile on what you want to do heading up to the trade deadline? You've got a really competitive Central Division. You could go from a second seed to a seventh seed pretty quick because of how how tough those top four teams are in the Central. So what do you want to do to fortify? Or do you just want to stay with the course here and just kind of let these guys ride and see what you have?
Well, I think you hit on the one spot. If I'm David Poile, I'm probably taking a look at, and that is there anybody out there that you feel good about coming in and playing on the wing alongside Ryan Johansson? Now, look, you know, Tolvanen had a great look last night on a play from Tomasino. I still think his shot is so good that at some point it's going to have to drop for him and going to have to start going in. It just really hasn't happened with much consistency so far this year. So maybe if you're Poile, the answer is that simple, and you just say, all right, well, we feel good about Tolvanen at some point breaking loose and being more of a factor offensively. But I do think it's going to be interesting to see whether or not Poile becomes a little bit more aggressive and goes and gets a winger for Johansson to play with. Now, I've heard some Predators fans throw out the idea of maybe trying to go get Claude Giroux out of Philadelphia, and I don't know if I can see the Predators putting themselves in a race like that, trying to go get a player like that at the deadline based on, you know, just what the cost would be in order to do that. I could be wrong. I just don't really foresee them getting themselves involved in a race like that, because I still think they've done a pretty good job of rebuilding this pipeline and kind of restocking the cupboard, as they say. And I don't know how much of that David Poile is going to want to throw away as he looks at the outlook of this team moving forward the next couple of years. But I do think there is a chance they go out, make a move, maybe bring somebody in to put along that first or second line, whatever you want to call it, with Johansson, and see if you can find something that way. But other than that, like, I think you can make a pretty strong case if you're Poile to just say, you know what, I like our team, I like the makeup of our group, and we're going to let it ride and see what these guys can do. I'm interested to see how he handles that. I agree with you. To me, there's really no scenario at this point where Philip Forsberg is involved in any sort of trade chatter.
Yeah, I think that's what to look for. Do they try to go for a big weapon, maybe a rental? And then the other parts, I think, that they could upgrade without giving up a whole lot of what you're saying, Robbie. In the Athletic, they had a really good outline over the weekend of how they've sort of refortified the system. They've got a pretty decent list of prospects right now, and they've got their picks going forward here. But a fourth-line center, maybe a veteran who adds a little bit more, or an extra defenseman who gives them a little depth there. Those are pieces that maybe you could get without, you know, mortgaging the future.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one thing to keep in mind that, you know, the picks and the prospects and all these things you just brought up, one thing to also keep in mind is that's not just a factor for the trade deadline coming up. The Predators also have something at their disposal right now that not a ton of teams around the league have, and that's salary cap space.
Yep.
So I think Poile is viewing this not only in the short term of here and now in this season and trying to maximize whatever this team can be, but also, like, I also wonder if there was a plan in place for the Predators in terms of their maybe 2 or 3 year vision, and maybe how much that's changed based on the way that this team has played, and whether or not that means the Predators could be more aggressive with the salary cap space they do have coming up this offseason as well. So, I mean, all of this, I think, has gone well ahead of expectations if you're the Predators to this point, at least outwardly. I don't know. I don't want to speak for them and what their inward expectations were, but the season so far has gone just about as well as I think you could have hoped for, and that's given them a whole lot of options. And, you know, we talked about it this morning. Obviously, Colorado is great, and they are a team that, especially when they're healthy, they're really difficult to contend with.
Not anymore. The wheels are falling off.
Well, they lost last night to Arizona. They're done.
Wheels are falling off.
Well, I think everybody would probably agree that heading into a series against Colorado, the Predators would be underdogs.
Yeah.
Outside of them in the West, like, is there really a team out there that you feel like, oh, the Predators, they'd have their hands full with that one? I mean, obviously,
I think Vegas is
going to
be in.
Vegas
will be in that discussion.
Series,
yeah,
especially if Eichel comes back.
Yep.
But my point is, there's not really a team out there that I look at and say, oh, well, Predators have no chance against them. And that's a pretty good spot to be in if you're David Poile.
Yep. You know, my shirt I would wear for the trading deadline, it would say, let it ride, baby. Let it ride.
Yeah, buddy.
Robbie, appreciate the visit. Really good stuff today. Outstanding work. Go enjoy your new home, and we'll be listening tomorrow morning.
That's what happens when you're vibing. Thanks, folks. Appreciate you.
Robbie Stanley. Robbie and Rex Road, 6 to 10, Monday through Friday, leading up to our show. We'll come back. Put a bow on the first hour of Darren, Donnie, and Chase next. We'll talk to Linda Cohn to begin the second hour. She had to, unfortunately, reschedule yesterday. something came up right as we were going to talk to her, so she'll join us in about 15 minutes. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. Good stuff there from Robbie Stanley. I was reading during the break. The Athletic put out a piece. Have you seen this where, you know, you everybody knows about the morning pickup games or, you know, a day where there's the pickup game and the people that would, you know, the names that would show up to that? Well, apparently, Justin Morneau does a pickup hockey game in his backyard with his buddies on Wednesdays.
Nice.
And the rosters include, you know, Joe Mauer, Jordan Leopold, Dustin Byfuglien, or Bufflin, however you want to call him.
Really?
Yeah, how about that?
That I did not know. I wouldn't have expected that. The others make sense, the Minnesota connection. Where is this happening, in Canada or in Minnesota?
I'll take in Minnesota.
Okay. Because you know Justin Morneau hails from Canada, and he once upon a time played for what coach that we know very well?
Barry Trotz.
Nope. Close. Brent Peterson.
Oh, really?
Yes. He was an excellent.
Petey coached Morneau?
Yes. Justin Morneau was an excellent hockey prospect.
Hmm.
And, of course, he was also quite a baseball player, and Brent Peterson famously told him, Justin, I know you're great at baseball and everything, but your future is in hockey, man. What are you doing?
Whoops. I think Justin made the right choice.
He might have been one of those guys, like those rare athletes that you see, you know, a Mookie Betts or a Shea Weber, where you just look at them and you see them and you're like, that guy could have chosen any sport and made it. You know, there's that rare guy that seems to have that. Morneau might have been one of those guys.
Willie. I know firsthand. You probably remember me telling this story when we were down at SEC Media Days. Chase and I wanted to take in, a minor league baseball game. I mean, we're in Birmingham. Why not? Right? At their new Regions Field. It was nice. So we go there. We got, you know, we're done with our work over at Media Days. They're playing that night. We go over there. We move down. We are sitting in right there at the on-deck circle. And all of a sudden, this guy comes out. And he is in the on-deck circle. And I looked at Chase and I said, basically, who the hell is that guy? That does not look like a minor league baseball player. I mean, we're just sitting there, you know, front second row. We're like second row from the on-deck circle. And I was like, oh, my gosh, this guy. I've got to find out who this guy is. This is just me looking at him, right? Like, holy crap. And he comes up to the plate. Now batting. Justin Morneau. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. He was on a rehab assignment. Or maybe that was when he was trying to get back, because he kind of faded at the end, right? I don't remember exactly how his career ended. I don't know if he's on a rehab or if he was just trying to maybe get back to that level. I don't know. I think it was a rehab assignment. But, yeah, no, to your point, like just me looking at him, I was like, Chase. That is not a you know, a minor league baseball player. Like, give me a break. Holy cow, who is this? It was Justin Morneau.
Hmm.
I mean, he's a big dude. Isn't he like 6'4" or something?
MVP 2006.
Yep. So Petey told him to his calling is hockey.
Said,
huh?
Yeah, you're good at baseball, really, but stick to hockey, man.
Kid, just listen to me. I'm Brent Peterson. Okay.
He laughs every time he tells that story. It's a great story. Brent Peterson, of course. Coached the Portland Winterhawks, the junior, had some great teams, and that's what elevated him to getting hired by Barry Trotz. He won a championship with them in the Western Hockey League, and so he had some studs come through there, and Justin Morneau was in the mix.
Outstanding. Hey, Washington has picked their team name. They'll not be the FTs anymore, although the FTs kind of grew on me, I'll be honest. It grew on me. I think it may be if we didn't have, you know, if we weren't an MLS market and we're kind of used to that, you know, when it comes to soccer, I probably would have thought it was ridiculous, but we kind of got so used to saying that with MLS. I was like, oh, it kind of grew on me. I was like, it's different. I don't know. I don't know how they felt in that market, but I really wasn't going, man, they've got to hurry up and pick a name. I kind of liked the FTs, but they're not going to be the FTs anymore. They're the Commanders. Washington Commanders.
Thought it was funny, Robbie, I heard say, I thought they said Commandos. Of course, him being from Hendersonville, home of the Commandos. But Commanders, they'll take a little getting used to. Safe choice, right? Not crazy. We'll see if it grows on you. Same thing with uniforms. My first brush, all right, whatever. They have a black alternate third jersey, which that's sort of bucks the tradition a little bit, so they're trying to add that. Just try to get a little Arizona State feel to it or something. But I have learned to hold off on this first impression slam of any uniform set that I see, because there's so many people. Like, don't be that guy. I remember I said it with the stadium jersey the day before they unveiled it. I was like, please just don't be that guy that slams the jersey first. This is terrible. And of course, we know that I don't care what jersey you see, there will be that faction of people. Sometimes it's bigger, sometimes it's smaller. But there's always that group that's just completely dumps on a new jersey, no matter what the jersey looks like.
Yeah.
No matter what.
That's true. It's true.
But that's the fun of it. Like, that's the whole point, is to be able to rip on it. My eyes don't need time for it to tell me it's ugly.
Why do you think Twitter was created?
That's exactly why it was created.
So those people can go straight and tweet, whether it's a team name or it's, you know, it's a uniform. Because it is, in all seriousness, it is tough. It's because when you've been used to something for your whole life and then it's changed to something else, you know, you're going to be like, it just doesn't. You know, I remember when the Denver Broncos, and I'll just be honest, I still don't love them. I don't love them. But you remember when they first unveiled the Denver Broncos? Like, you got to keep in mind, this was like way out there. It kind of looked like NFL Europe. It looked like Arena League. Like, this was when they came up with this new, you know, the uniforms that we're accustomed to now.
You're talking about when they switched from the horse with the big D.
The horse with the D and the horse in the middle, yeah.
And they went with the predominantly navy look. You're right. That
people
made a lot of waves.
People went nuts. I mean nuts. Crazy. I don't think there was even Twitter then. If there was, it wasn't as big as it is today.
No, there wasn't
today.
Twitter. This was late
90s. I don't think so. Was it?
Yeah.
They've had those uniforms that long?
Yeah. When they won the Super Bowl back-to-back with John Elway, that's the uniform
right.
they had.
You're right.
Wasn't
that's
like the
exactly
first
right.
year they did that?
I think you're right.
Yeah. They might have won it the first year.
And that's why they won it, because those uniforms are so good. It's such a significant upgrade.
There also weren't that many teams back then that would go with the all one color, and they did do that sometimes. They went all navy.
That's how bad it was. Like, there wasn't even social media then, and that's how bad people – we still knew people went bananas.
Because I think of people kind of like the Orange Crush thing. They had a pretty distinctive look before that. It wasn't a bad look at all. I like that look.
It's what I grew up on. I loved it. I thought it was awesome. And then when they changed it, you know, kind of like the Bucs, right? Same deal. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, same deal. I mean, when they changed, it was like a lot of people saw them. And it was like, I think probably with them, the old uniforms were a little bit offensive to some people. They're like, get rid of these orange circles.
Now, those were pretty loud. I mean, those were – and they had lost for so long.
Right.
It kind of
– you understood. Like they're maybe wanting to move away from that.
I get that. And I did think that the change they did was pretty bold. Now, I'm never a fan of changing your colors. And they sort of changed the colors. Even now, you can tell they still like throwing that old orange in there just to highlight the jersey. They still kind of work it in there. But it's still kind of a thing of the past, the old creamsicles.
Yeah, that one too. But people still, it's the same deal. It's like, you know, but there were people that defend, that's, you know, that's their look. And that's just how it works. I suspect Commanders is pretty easy to, like, I don't think there's going to be a lot of blowback. I think it's got like a, you know, it's got a short window. Everybody will get out of their system and they'll move on. That's just what it is. There's not much you can really – what are you really going to say to Commanders, right? And think about where the city, it's in the market, it's in. It's like, really? To me, this is going to be very, very short-lived, and everybody will get over it. The people that want to kick and scream, and then they'll move on to the next thing. So short shelf life. All right, we'll come back. Linda Cohn to begin the second hour. We'll catch up with her. We'll hit her with a variety of things. Remember, she's out in L.A., got the hockey angle. We've got the Super Bowl angle. We've got this lawsuit that took everybody by storm yesterday. Like, holy cow. We'll certainly be discussing that today. A lot more coming here on Darren, Donnick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game.